hoping a magic potion could save my heart. Who knew that these feelings had a name? I'm worthy of change, same as you are. Mirror, mirror, don't you judge me, don't you dare. Who knew I was capable of loving? Who was there staring back? I said staring back.
Everyone, and welcome to the Transitional Wisdom Podcast, where Nash and I discuss all things trans and queer related from a variety of different perspectives. Our goal here is to share stories and experiences in the hopes of connecting with others and also furthering education surrounding trans related issues. I think it's important for us to know that we're all so beautifully different, but hey, we're not alone. Hello everyone, this is a special message and also a trigger warning for this upcoming episode. We know here on the Transitional Wisdom Podcast, we cover a lot of different issues. This episode is no different. It does contain subject matter relating to self-harm, suicidal ideation, sexual assault, and also incest. If you have difficulty with any of these subjects, we do recommend skipping this episode and reaching out to any of your support system. Thanks.
So, my name's Drew. I live in the Pacific Northwest, specifically Vancouver, Washington, essentially Portland, Oregon. No one knows where Vancouver is, and not BC. Don't ask me if it's BC. I am 24. I just got married 3 months ago. I work in digital marketing, and I am trans and use he, him pronouns. So
nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too. So the trigger warning for this episode, I am going to be talking about mental health and self-harm and suicide and my experience with that in relation to kind of my gender journey, I guess. So if you're not cool with that, don't listen to this episode. First of all, the reason I like talking about it, even though it's a really like negative, not negative thing, but a hard thing to talk about, is that I think it's really important, and I think it really ties into my journey with figuring out who I am. So that's why I enjoy talking about it, just because I can only imagine if I went through it, somebody else had to have gone through it as well. So I just want to be that person for other people.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I guess I'll just start at the beginning. So in sixth grade, I don't remember what happened, but I was really upset about something, and for whatever reason, there was a pair of scissors near me. Don't know what it was that crossed my mind to think I should use those to hurt myself, but that's what I decided to do. I didn't think anything bad about it. At first, it was just kind of like, okay, that was weird, like, that happened, you know, whatever. And then I had my, like, group of five friends that we hung out every single day, ate lunch together, you know, whatever. And so I told them, I don't remember if it was like the next day or like a week later or whatever, but I told them pretty soon after it happened, and I was like really, really concerned about one of my friend's responses to that, because she was super, super Christian, and she was never actually judgmental in any way. It was just like my perception of Christianity at the time. So I was really scared of kind of what her reaction was going to be, and in the end, she was just like, if you want to come to youth group with me, like, you know, that's a safe space for you. So I did go with her, but the church is just not my scene. It's just not for me. So, or at least at the time, I don't know, maybe in the future that'll change, but so yeah, that was kind of my first experience. And from there, it just continued happening. It didn't really stop, and no one, I mean, we were in sixth grade. We were pretty young. We were like 12. So no one really knew what to say, but I knew not to tell my teachers, so, or my parents, or anybody that would have to tell my parents. I just really didn't want to, like, let my parents down in any way. So I hid that for a while. So fast forward a couple of years to eighth grade, and I have this big falling out with one of my best friends I don't even remember what it was actually about. I honestly think it was about a boy, which I just think is the most ridiculous thing ever. But we end up not being friends after that. And looking back on it, I was very, very much in love with this girl. And that was why I took it so hard. So that was the first time that I thought about suicide. And I actually did tell one of my teachers. I emailed her pretty much as soon as I got home that day and was like, I just had a really bad day. And this was a teacher that, like, I spent a lot of lunches hanging out with her. Like, she just would listen to me and let me kind of be alone because I'm very, very introverted and, like, I need my space away from people. So she was kind of my safe space at school. So I had emailed her, and at the end of my email said, it would be really great if I could just curl up in a hole and die. She obviously needed to call my parents after that. So she called the house, which I was at the house and actually answered the phone. Didn't realize it was her at all. She was just like, you know, is your mom there? And I was like, no, she's not. She's at work. Do you have her work number? I don't even know who this is. And I'm like, here's my mom's work number. Like, looking back, like, I probably should have, like, verified who this was. But so she hung up the phone with me and called my mom. And then my mom called me. And she was like, hey, like, what's going on? And I was just like, oh, nothing, I'm fine. Like, I was just upset in the moment. We didn't talk about it for at least, like, 6 years after that. So that caused a lot of tension with me and my mom, but my mom just didn't know what to do. She didn't know, like, I said I was fine. I said it was just in the moment. And so she was just like, well, I can only take what you say. I can't assume things. So, yeah, I held that against her for a really long time, and then we ended up having a conversation about it. I think it was like 6 years later, and I was just like, I've been so mad at you all this time about this. And she's like, I had no idea. Like, I just didn't know what to do. And I'm the oldest in the family, so it was kind of like I'm their first run, you know? They don't know what they're doing yet. And then my brother and sister get away with everything, but it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Same. Yeah. I'm glad you both understand, because my wife is the baby of the family, so we're at complete opposite ends, and she's like, I don't understand the pressures that you have, and I'm like, I don't understand the pressures you have, which are so different.
How many siblings do you have?
So I have my twin brother and sister, and they are 18. Yeah, they're 18 now. And then I have three step-siblings, so my stepdad has a son from his previous marriage, and then my biological dad has two kids from my stepmom's previous marriage. So, yeah, a lot of siblings, but I lived with my twin brother and sister all growing up. And they had no idea any of this was going on. You know, they just thought I was the older sibling that was mean to them all the time, because that's how I was.
Because that's what we do.
Yeah, exactly. That is our job. That's what we have to do. So, yeah, so eighth grade was my first kind of suicidal ideation, I would say. And then ninth grade, so freshman year of high school, is when I started kind of like questioning my gender and my sexuality, and just I guess I didn't straight out question my gender, but I knew I was not feminine. That was not something I identified with. I kind of went all out butch lesbian, you know, just all every stereotype you could think of, flannels every day and the whole nine yards. That was a really confusing time for me. I didn't know how my parents would react to something like that. My grandparents were big influences in my life at the time, and I didn't know how they'd react to that. You know, there was a lot of pressure on that. And all through high school, I mean, I'm still self-harming. I'm still just basically feeling like crap every day, really. But I had a really good home life. I had really good grades. I had friends. Like, there's no logical reason, you know, quote unquote logical reason for me to have felt that way. So I think a lot of people, when they did find out, kind of had a hard time comprehending it. And there were times where, I don't remember if it was my younger siblings or my parents, but somebody saw some of my cuts, and they're like, what happened? I was like, oh, the cat attacked me, which was like such a normal thing. I don't know why this is a thing. I freaking love animals, but I like smother them so much that they hate me. So it was like not a big deal. Like, yeah, of course the cat attacked you. Like, that's normal, you know? So nobody thought anything of it. And I think that desensitized me to it, too. Like, oh, it is just a cat scratch. It's fine. You know, like, I was kind of able to lie to myself.
Yeah, and in a way, you know, other people know, but they don't know.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to get questioned for that.
Exactly. And then my friends at the time in high school, I mean, most of them were going through the same thing. So it was just all kind of like, oh yeah, I relapsed last night, like, cool, whatever, no big deal. So I had support, but I don't regret anything, but I don't think it was maybe the right support, because it was kind of enabling. It was just like, well, I did it too, so it's fine, you know? So ninth grade, start questioning myself, basically, as a whole. The next year, my sophomore year, I start dating girls a little bit, but not telling my parents, and presenting a lot more masculine, which I'd always been a tomboy. Like, I would get mistaken for a boy when I was little all the time, and those were always my happiest moments looking back. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember when, like, somebody at the zoo was like, oh, you're here with your grandson, so cute. And my grandpa was just immediately like, no, it's my granddaughter. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So yeah, sophomore year, I start dating girls and just, like, kind of exploring that. And I think I, like, said I was bi for a while because I was, like, too scared to just say I was gay. And I think it's really important to know I never once used the term lesbian for myself, like, ever. I hated that word. It was not... I was just like, that's not me, but I definitely like girls. So I had a lot of confusion at this point in my life, basically. So it was my sophomore year. I took this girl out. We went to the fair, and I was so excited because it was kind of my first date, like, whatever. And at the end of the night, she was just like, yeah, I'm not interested in you, but thanks for a good time.
Dang.
I was like, okay, cool, awesome. So I go home, and I'm, like, super, super bummed, of course. And my mom's like, are you okay? And, like, my dad's like, you seem off, you know, like, what's going on? I was like, no, I'm fine. So they leave me alone. That night, we were having a campfire in the backyard, just, like, hanging out, whatever. So it's, like, midnight, and it's just my mom and I out there at this point. And I'm like, okay, this is my chance. I need to come out to her and, like, just tell her. Couldn't do it. Like, all night, it's all I'm thinking about, and, like, I just can't bring myself to do it. And we walk inside to go to bed, finally. And I'm like, hey, Mom, like, by the way, I like girls. Okay, good night. Like, literally just like that. Like, okay, good night. I'm going to bed. Like, we're not talking about it. And she's like, no. We're like, come here. We're talking about this. So I'm like, okay. And she's like, I mean, yeah, I, like, could tell something was up today, obviously. Like, what happened? So I told her, and she's like, well, I'm sorry you had to deal with that. But also, like, I think you're too young to know if you are interested in girls or not. Like, just focus on school, you know, kind of the typical response.
And how old are you at this point?
I was a sophomore, so, like, 15 or 16. That was kind of my first coming out, and then didn't tell anybody after that. Just kind of kept it to myself. Besides my friends. All my friends were always, they knew what was going on, and they were like, yeah, whatever, I don't care. So kind of the first girl I was into was my best friend's younger sister. So, I mean, they had to know a little bit. So, yeah, so that was a little bit of a rough year. The first year, like, actually dating girls and trying to date girls anyway. And then my junior year, so I was in a program called Running Start, where you take college classes while you're still in high school. And so I was actually going to college pretty much full time. I had to take, like, one class at the high school, but I was like, get me out of here. I don't want to be here anymore. So I was actually at the community college, and just kind of any girl that would talk to me and look at me, like, I was like, yeah, okay, we can do whatever, you know, we can date, we can whatever that looks like. So just kind of being a player at the time, if I'm being honest. And ultimately, looking back on that, I think it was just, like, I was so disconnected from myself, and just, like, I don't actually identify with this identity, but I'm, like, supposed to be so prideful about it, and, like, it was just this conflicting feeling and not knowing kind of what I'm supposed to do. I mean, in hindsight, obviously, I'm supposed to do whatever I'm supposed to do, but, yeah, there are no rules. So this is the year I met my now wife, actually. It was my junior year. So she was going to the community college. as just a college student, and I totally thought she was a Running Start student, and she thought I was a college student, so we, like, flipped each other. But she did not talk to me at all. We had a women's studies class together, of course.
That's awesome.
And I would sit next to her every single day and, like, try to talk to her, and she just, like, would not talk to me. The only time she'd talk would be like, yeah, you can copy my homework, I don't care. Okay, cool. So I finally give up by the end of the semester, the quarter, or whatever. Come to find out now, she was in a controlling relationship at the time and, like, wasn't allowed to talk to anybody. So, not mad at her for it. It is what it is. But yeah, so I definitely knew I was interested in her at this time. And then it was just kind of like, I'm probably not going to see her again, you know, whatever. So that year finishes, I go into my senior year, and I'm in my last quarter at the community college, and I'm in my geology class, and in walks Natalie, my now wife, and she just walks right over to me and is like, hey, like, you're the only one I know in here, like, can I sit by you? And I was like, sure. And I was, like, going hard after this other girl at the time, so we ended up kind of, like, talking, and, like, we'd hang out after class and stuff, but I was just always talking about this other girl. Like, I'm going to hang out with this other girl, you know, whatever. And Natalie says to this day that she was not trying to get with me at all. She was just like, truly, you were the only person I knew in that class. I'm like, yeah, okay. Like, I don't know if I believe it, but that's fine.
And throughout all of this, are you consistently still self-harming?
Yeah, there were windows where, you know, I would go a couple months without self-harming, but there were windows where it was daily. So, yeah, I mean, it ranged. It depended on what was going on in my life. You know, the struggles of being in high school, basically.
So at this point, were you exploring your gender as well?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. Like, in that women's studies class, that was when I really was like, okay, yeah, like, I'm definitely queer. I don't know what that means exactly yet, but that's definitely me. I identify with this, like, kind of outsider perspective, I guess. You know, our professor would, like, explain certain things about, like, going to the grocery store and trying to get a card for your same gender partner and, like, that not existing, especially at the time. So this was 2012, so it was, like, right before it kind of, like, became okay. Which, obviously, there's still issues, but whatever, we've made progress. Yeah, that was kind of just the first time that I was like, oh, like, I feel like I'm going to have a hard life, basically. And, like I said, I knew I was into girls at the time, but I didn't really know what that meant, and I was like, I think I maybe am also into guys, but I'm not really sure. But also, like, I don't want to sleep with guys, so that was also a weird disconnect. Which, again, looking back, I'm like, well, there were a lot of guys that I was like, wow, you're really attractive, but, like, I want to be you. I don't want to be with you. So, which that reminded me of something. So him and I played baseball together for 7 years, and then my mom was like, okay, like, you have to play softball with the girls now, and then I quit. Like, that's just, like, a huge, like, wow, how did I not know sooner? Like, I literally refused to identify with the girls. Like, that's insane.
Mm-hmm. Wow, yeah.
So, senior year, yeah, I re-meet my now wife. So we start dating in March of 2012. And a couple months later, she leaves town for college in Idaho. So I don't know how many hours away she was, but it felt like, you know, a lifetime. So we end up breaking up, actually. I was like, I can't do the distance. Like, this is just not... I can't. She's like, okay, I mean, like, what do you say to that? So we broke up, and maybe a month, maybe 2 months at the most later, I'm sitting on my bedroom floor just, like, bawling because I feel like I have nobody, and just feeling super, super depressed, and, like, not even Natalie could deal with me, basically, you know, like, even though I broke up with her, like, yeah. A lot of shame. That was ultimately what it was, of who I was and who I was attracted to. So as I'm sitting there on the floor, I told myself, okay, I'm going to text Natalie, and if she texts me back, then it's going to be okay. But if she doesn't, this is my last night. essentially. I had a plan, like, everything was ready to go. So I text her, and I don't even say anything about, like, what's actually going on. I'm just like, hey, like, how are you? I haven't talked to you in a long time, whatever. She immediately texts me back, and I just, like, I just remember feeling so much relief, which, like, I did not actually want to die. I just wanted something to change. So that was a big, like, realization for me. So we end up talking, like, all night and get back together, and we've been together ever since, so... And now we're married, so obviously it worked out. So I end up telling her about that night a couple months later, maybe even like a year later, and she was just kind of like shocked and like, I don't know what to say, I don't really know what to do for you, like, are you okay now, you know? She was really concerned about me now, and it was right around that time that I had told her, like, I had been self-harming and, like, doing all these things, and so she, I don't remember exactly how it happened, but she was just saying, basically tell me the next time you do. Well, that, like, not in a bad way, but kind of, like, instilled some shame with it. And so then it was like, oh, well, I don't want to because I don't want to tell her that I did. So that helped a lot. And we didn't live together at the time, so it was all over text or, you know, FaceTime or whatever. And so that did help a lot, but I was still self-harming for quite a while. And then, so I went to college here locally, and I had a really hard time. I did okay in the beginning. I don't really know what it was about it. Just, I mean, I was working full-time, part-time-ish, going to school full-time. You know, I was doing a lot. And I think that just ultimately got to me, but, so I had a hard time and was self-harming more frequently again, and, but I would tell Natalie for the most part, pretty much every time it happened, or very soon after, so that at least got me talking about it, and then I think it was when I was in college, it might have even been my senior year of high school, though, when I started seeing a therapist, and my first therapist, like, he was great, but just because somebody's gay does not mean they know anything about trans people. And so as I'm, like, struggling with my gender, he's just, like, attributing it to my sexuality. So I wasn't able to really, like, work through that with him. And he did help me a lot with the self-harm and all that kind of stuff, though. And I'm super grateful for him. But then he kind of abruptly just left and moved to Florida, and I was like,
oh no,
okay, cool, like, bye, awesome. I don't know how to function without you, so great. So the place that I was seeing him, the clinic I was seeing him at, I actually had worked for, and so one of my coworkers was like, no, like, we're gonna set you up with somebody else, like, we're not gonna let you not have a therapist, basically. And I was like, okay. And so she's like, the only person we have open is this woman, Jolene. And this is my therapist to this day, so obviously that worked out. But I was like, no, I can't see a woman. Like, I don't connect well with women. Like, you know, all these things. I had all these excuses. And so I go into therapy with her and have my first consultation. And I, like, kind of go home and I'm like, damn it. Like, I think I like her. Like, I think she's great. I think she's a good fit. Like, God damn it. I didn't want that to happen, but here we are. So, yeah. And then, like, 2 months after I started seeing Jolene, we found out that my grandpa, who I was living with at the time, was molesting a family member.
No.
So we, I quickly moved out of that house. And we chose to press charges, so we went through the whole court process, the whole nine yards, and my grandma to this day says that he didn't do it and that we're making it up because we wanted to put him in jail for whatever reason.
That's heavy.
Yeah. So that shook my world a little bit. So I was living with my grandparents at the time, so I very quickly was like, all right, well, Nat, I guess we're moving in together, like, I don't know. I have nowhere else to go. Of course, my parents were like, you can come back home. But, like, they had a really small house at the time. And, like, my brother and sister were in high school. And so I was like, I'm good. I don't want to do that. that's kind of how Natalie and I ended up moving in together. I mean, we were talking about it already, but it was just like, well, I guess we're doing this now. That's happening now. So, yeah, that court process was brutal. I was really, what I thought was really close with my grandpa. All growing up, he was always like the person I would call, and, you know, he was my best friend for the most part. So, yeah, this was shocking news, first of all, and second of all, just completely changed our lives, obviously. Like, I had to move. Like, that's a big deal, so.
Yeah.
And there was no hesitation by me whatsoever believing that he did it, because it was just, like, the person, I don't want to out who it was, but the family member that it was, she was terrified that I wouldn't believe her because I was so close with my grandpa. And I was like, no, like, if you say he did that, like, I know you would not make that up, like, you know. And she had actually tried to tell me probably 2 years before that, that he was doing this to her, but I remember it so clearly. We were at the beach, and we were sitting in the hot tub, and she was like, I have to tell you something, and, like, was, like, you know, having trouble getting it out. And then she was just like, no, never mind, he told me not to tell anybody. And I, like, immediately had the thought of, like, he did something bad to you, but, like, it was very quickly overshadowed by, like, but that's my grandpa, he wouldn't do that. And she didn't push it any further, so whatever. But so, tied on top of everything else that I was feeling at the time, I was also feeling a lot of shame, because I felt like I should have said something sooner. Like, I knew, but I didn't know, and I should have said something, and yeah. So that sent me downhill a little bit, obviously. Going to court was really hard, and just, like, seeing him, because I didn't see him from the day that I found out until I saw him in court. And, like, he got wheeled out in a wheelchair because he's old, I guess. I don't really know, but I was just like, that's pathetic. Like, you can walk, stop. Like, okay. And he like, really tried to pull the, like, I'm a fragile old man card, and the judge was just like, no, I don't think so. Like, you seem capable. And, like, people were saying, like, his friends wrote letters of recommendation or whatever, saying, like, no, there's no way he could do this. And they kept saying, like, he's an upstanding citizen with no record and blah, blah, blah. And the judge was like, I don't care if you have a record or not. I mean, just, like, tore it apart. It was amazing. It was the best. That was rough, obviously. And so then my grandparents weren't, like, at my college graduation, which was a big deal. And also 2 months after my family member told us what was going on, I was like, oh, I think this is a good time to tell my family I'm also trans. Like, let's just throw that in the mix. It was more of like, I can't hold on to this anymore. Like, I just have to. And I was living with Natalie, and so I'd already talked to her, and she was like, you're my partner. I don't care how you identify. Like, tell me what to call you, basically. And so I sent my parents and my siblings an email pretty much explaining everything. And I don't have that email anymore. I can't find it, and I'm kind of bummed about it, but I'll find it one day, hopefully. But yeah, so I sent them that email and then texted everybody and was just like, hey, like, I sent you an email. Can you please, like, let me know you got it? Because my anxiety was like, oh, I'm just never going to know if they even read it. And my dad texted back, like, pretty fast, and was just like, love you. And I'm like, okay, I love you too.
Yeah, wait, was that a yes or no?
Did you read it? Or, like, yeah. And I had actually told my brother beforehand, just because my brother and I we are pretty close, and I was just like, hey, like, I need to tell you something, but also I don't want to, like, put that burden on you. And he was just like, yeah, no, tell me. So I told him, and he was just like, yeah, you've always been my brother, like, I know. I was like, okay, cool.
So cute.
And my sister had a little bit of a hard time with it. She was just kind of like, she wasn't not okay with it, but she wasn't okay with it either. She was just like, I'm confused, I think, ultimately. And then my mom just didn't say anything. So I was like, okay. And for probably a year after that, we didn't talk about it.
Really?
At all. They kept using my birth name, kept using she, her, you know, the whole nine yards.
And you had outright asked for a different name and pronouns at this point?
Yeah. I said, you know, I want to go by Drew now, and my pronouns are he, him, and all these things. And I said something along the lines of, at the end of the day, I love you guys, and that's all that matters. Like, that's all that I really care about. So, yeah, like, a year later, I am, like, about to start hormones. And so I'm like, I need to talk to my parents because, like, they're going to visibly see changes now and, like, awkward. So I call my mom and I'm like, hey, can you and dad come over? Like, I really need to talk to you. And this is the night before I'm going to start hormones. Like, I waited until the last moment possible, basically. So they come over and they're like, what's going on? Like, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I just, like, want to tell you I'm starting hormones tomorrow. And they're just kind of like, well, I don't know how I feel about it, but okay, like, you're an adult and that's your decision. Like, okay. And my mom had made some sort of comment along the lines of essentially alluding to, as long as you, like, don't get top surgery or anything like that. And I was like, I'll just cross that bridge later.
Right. Let's do the hormones first.
Yeah.
One step at a time.
Yeah. One step at a time. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, they kept calling me my birth name. I mean, they still call me my birth name sometimes. But, like, I've talked to my parents. Kind of both. Like, my mom is, like, 50-50 Drew and my birth name. But, like, her and I talk about it all the time. And she's like, it's just, like, habit. It's just what comes out. I try to think about it. And, like, she's like, you know, if we're in public, like, I always say Drew. And I was like, yeah, you do. And, like, she introduced me as her son for the first time a couple weekends ago. So that was really cool.
Oh, yeah, that's so awesome.
Yeah.
That's
awesome.
Thanks. And then, like, my dad, we don't really talk about it, but not really intentionally, just because he's just more laid back and just like whatever, and I don't know, there just hasn't really been a reason to talk about it. But the night before my wedding, so just like 3 months ago, my dad and I were sleeping in the same room, and we may or may not have had a few alcoholic beverages at this point. And well, I remember saying the room is spinning, and yeah,
just one or two.
Yeah, just a couple. Like, it wasn't that much. And I said to my dad at some point, I was like, I have a really, like, deep question for you. And he's like, okay. And I was like, am I your son or your daughter? And he was like, you're my son. And I was just like, okay. Like, you see it. Like, you might not use the right name all the time or the right pronouns, but, like, yeah, you see it. And that's fine. That's all that matters to me. A couple days before the wedding, I was on the phone with my mom just, like, talking about all the wedding things and all the insanity and chaos and how is everything even going to happen. And at some point in that conversation, I was like, you know, is it going to be weird for you? And she was like, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, like, I'm getting married as a man. I'm not getting married as a woman. I'm not wearing a dress. Like, all these things that you had kind of made up for me in your head are not happening. Like, how do you feel? And she was just like, you're my kid and you're getting married. I don't even think about it anymore.
Oh, that's great.
And I just lost it and start bawling. She's like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make you cry. I was like, no, yeah, like, they're good tears. Good, it's fine.
I want to just comment on how patient you have been throughout this entire process with your family members and everything. It's amazing and it's needed.
Yeah, very patient.
I try to be.
Yeah, I think it speaks to where you're at and the level of comfort and maturity that you've reached at this point.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that.
It's like maturity on a whole other level.
Thanks. And I actually had my mom and my dad and my stepdad, who, anytime I'm saying my dad, I mean my stepdad. He's been my dad since I was two, so he's my dad. But I had my mom and dad walk me down the aisle, so they still kind of like had something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they both got to have something, and that's awesome.
And then we actually did dances with both sets of parents. So I dance with my mom and my dad, and she danced with her mom.
That's awesome.
Dad. So, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I try to be patient with them and just, like, they raised me as a girl for 20-some-odd years before I said, don't do that anymore. You know, like, that's a big change for them, and they also just had all these dreams for me that were tied to my gender, sort of, in a way, you know, like with the wedding and having kids and like all that kind of stuff. And I personally don't think it's fair to just be like, well, just get over it, this is who I am. Like, yes, unconditional love should basically imply that, but that doesn't mean they're going to be able to just make the switch overnight.
Yeah, so, you know, it takes communication as well, and, you know, everything else.
Yeah, Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we have to give our parents and our family members time to adjust and to just, you know, sift through their own feelings, because I don't know, you know, it took me 26 years to figure it out, and except myself, we can't expect everybody else to just immediately flip a switch.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean being disrespectful is okay, but it just means giving them time to, you know, go through their process too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think, because, like, my parents, they still have pictures of me pre-transition up in their house, like all my school pictures and stuff. And I know a lot of trans people that would be like, no, I've never let my parents do that. I'm like, but, like, that's still me. Like, it's not who I identify as anymore, but that's such a big chunk of my story. How could I just push that aside, I guess?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So more in the recent years, so, like since I graduated college, so my very, very last semester in college was the worst semester of my life. I was project manager on our, like, big senior project, and naturally, as group projects go, I had one guy on my team that was just like, I'm just not going to do anything. So I had one guy that was like, I just don't want to do anything, basically, and then one guy that was like, oh, I'm going to be on a reality TV show, like, I'm in California for half the semester. I was like, all right, cool. So then it was down to, like, I think it was just me and two of my friends, and one more girl. So there are four of us, essentially, in this group. And I'm leading it, and I'm just, like, so frustrated with this kid that is just, like, I'm just not going to do any work. So I end up, like, staying up all night doing his portion of the group work and, you know, whatever. End up doing his job, plus this guy that's, like, supposedly on a reality TV show who's not even there. So, like, we have his work to do as well. Luckily, one of my really good friends was on my team, and he was just like, you tell me what you need and I will help however I can. So, yeah, I mean, the team stepped up for sure, but I took on a lot of that responsibility because it's, like, at the end of the day, our professor's going to come back to me and be like, why didn't this get done? So I had a lot of pressure from that, and that really knocked me down. I had days where I missed work because I was just, like, so... I don't even know if it was anxiety or just I had pulled an all-nighter and had to finish something. You know, like, anything you can think of, basically. I was like, I just can't come in today. I'm sorry. And luckily, I worked for a guy who actually went to the same school I was going to at the time. And he was like, yeah, like, I know the final semester is hard. Like, do whatever you need to do. Work from home. Like, whatever. He was super, super accommodating. So that was awesome. But I definitely had some self-harm relapses during that senior year, that semester. And after that, it got a lot easier because then it was just like, oh, I have a full-time job and, like, that's all I do. But then the whole thing with my grandpa happened, which just naturally caused some relapse. So yeah, it's been, I would say, more on and off rather than consistent since college, probably. And living with Natalie, first of all, just made it harder to be able to self-harm because she was just with me all the time. And whereas, like, when I was living with my grandparents, I would just go in my room and be alone in my room with the door closed. Like, they have no idea what's going on behind closed doors. So, and they had no idea any of that was going on either. Like, my grandma had made a comment, like, years prior to me having these issues about her friend's granddaughter who was suicidal. And it was just like, being suicidal is such a sin. And I was just like, I don't agree with that, but okay, we'll just, like, not deal with that. So obviously they weren't people I could talk to, but also my grandpa was on Prozac. So I'm like, it's a little bit conflicting, but whatever. And yeah, I did go on Prozac for a little while, with the intention of getting off, because I just, even though I'm on testosterone for the rest of my life, I don't want to be on a medication for the rest of my life. I just don't like the idea of relying on something like that for me personally. I have no, like, if that's what you need to do for you, like, absolutely do what you need to do, do what feels right. But for me, it was just like, no, I need an end date to this. And it was frustrating because my therapist and my doctor were like, well, we can't really give you an end date. Like, it's up to you, sort of. So I had to put in a lot of hard work in therapy and a lot of work on, like, mindfulness and connecting with my emotions, because that was not something I did. It was, like, I was so, like, looking back, I don't know how I functioned. I was so emotionless on the outside. Obviously, I felt every emotion possible, but I was just so numb on the outside.
Not expressing.
Yeah, exactly. So, didn't talk about it, didn't actually deal with anything. So yeah, I put in a lot of hard work. I was on Prozac for like a year or so, and then I tapered off, and I haven't been back on since. But I have been up and down self-harm. Not so much suicidal. There have been times where it's like, it's not that I'm like, I want to go home and do X, Y, and Z to take my life. It's more like, oh, I'm driving on the road in the car, and, like, what if my car just hit the median? So it's, like, disconnected a little bit, if that makes sense. But I haven't had that in a while. I haven't been any form of suicidal in, I don't know, probably 2 years or so.
That's huge.
2.5 years. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I think a big thing is working on mindfulness, and, I mean, I've gone to counseling for 4 years now, and I mean, my therapist, I could be like, hey, I know I was just in like 2 days ago, but can I come back in like a day? Like, I need that. She's like, yep, sure, I'll get you in, you know, like, so relying on my therapist instead of just like, oh, I go once a week or I go once every other week. And she's also awesome about, like, if I just send her an email and I'm like, this is what I'm dealing with, can you send me some resources? She'll be like, yeah, here you go. But now I just, like, have my own collection of those resources, because it's been, like, 4 years, so those have piled up for sure. And now, I go to counseling every other week now, but one of those weeks is couples counseling, which I think is awesome, because it gives Natalie and I a place to kind of, like, put whatever we want on the table. Not that we don't talk about things, but the things that are, like, harder to talk about, like, I don't know, money, or like if I am having a hard time mentally, like that's not always an easy thing to just say to your partner. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you find like when you started your like maybe medical like aspects of, or you know, your first hormone shot and everything like that, did that help alleviate? Because it's not an end all be all. You know, a lot of people go on hormones and they're like, I'm never going to be sad again.
Yeah. And I would say that was me. I was like, I'm going to start hormones and I'm going to get top surgery and my life is going to be perfect and I will never deal with that again. Boy, was I wrong.
Like, that was the extent to, like, your quote-unquote problems was just, like, gender identity kind of thing. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, no. There's, like, some mental things happening there, too. So, yeah, I mean, when I first started hormones, obviously there was just so much excitement. And so that kind of overshadowed everything else. And where I was working was super, super accepting and just like, cool, we're changing your name to Drew. We're doing this, we're doing that. Like, it was a very smooth transition from the executive side. I had one coworker that was like, I'm just not going to call you that. And it was also like a weird situation with her because she met me as Drew. Like, she should not have known my birth name at all, but her husband had worked with us pre-transition, pre my coming out, so he knew my birth name and had referred to me as my birth name to her, I guess. And so yeah, that it was really strange. Weird because they were super, super like hipster and like, we're so cool and like progressive and like, you know, whatever. They were really, really artsy. I don't know, whatever. They were probably fine people, but I did not particularly get along with them. And then yeah, she did that. She was just like, I'm just not gonna call you the name you asked me to call you. I'm like, okay, cool. So that sucked, but she got fired, so it's fine.
There you go.
It's great. But yeah, so there was definitely that beginning phase where I did have so much acceptance from friends and coworkers and my partner, and a huge online community. Obviously that was like when I first found like Chris from Flaunt and all those like big people. I can't even think of anybody else right now, of course, but and yeah, started watching their videos and stuff. Yeah, and seeing them like in the very early stages of hormones, not like 2 years on hormones where I'm like, okay, yeah, I want to get there, but like that's not going to happen tomorrow. No matter how much testosterone I put in my body, that's not going to happen. So, yeah, that was a really good resource for me. And yeah, I think the general term I would use would be excitement at that time. That's all I felt, really, for the first probably 2 or 3 months. And then I started having shot anxiety. And I've been talking to Nash about this for like a week now, so he knows all about it. But yeah, I started having shot anxiety and wasn't able to do my own shots. Then my partner was doing my shots, and she's been doing my shots ever since. So that's been a struggle. But that caused me a little bit of like, then I felt like a burden, like, oh, my partner has to do this for me, and like, why can't I just do it myself? And like, so that caused a little bit of a downward spiral a little bit. And then also just feeling like the changes weren't happening fast enough. Like, my voice dropped pretty quick. Like, the first 2 months, it was, like, pretty deep, considering where I started, and that wasn't enough for me, you know? Like, but I don't have facial hair, and I still have a chest, and I still this and that, and, you know, you nitpick at all the little things. So it was a kind of weird, as far as, like, mentally, in my mental health, it was a weird, like, conflict of really, really amazing and really, really bad. So it was a very weird time.
Yeah. Well, and it's not like, you know, there's nothing, you know, else in life that happens. You know, people think that, you know, with trans people, you know, once you've had hormones or had surgeries and stuff, you should be happy and you should just be like, well, I mean, what else do you have to complain about? You know, you know, you've gotten everything that you wanted, you know. But it's like, no, we're humans, and we have other emotions, and we deal with the same real-life shit that everybody else does.
Yeah, exactly. I still go to work every day and have that stress, and I have a partner, and there's stress in that just inherently. And
then on top of that, I also navigate the world as a trans person, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's the opposite of what people think. Yeah. And the same goes for anything else. Like I said, I've been seeing my therapist for, like, 4 years. And we started practicing mindfulness and implementing those things pretty much day one. I still need to go see her at least once a month to, like, okay, keep me on track with this, please. You know what I mean? Like, it's not just, like, I guess my point is she didn't give me those tools and then say, like, all right, have fun. Like, it's a process.
Like, yeah, you got this.
Yeah, no. And I struggle on that side, too, with just, like, well, I have all these tools. Why did this not fix everything? And my wife is amazing, and she's just always like, well, that's just not like how life works, babe. You know, so she keeps me in check for sure. And then she's like, why don't you go get the worksheet and like do the worksheet, use the tool you have. I love getting homework from my therapist. That's my favorite thing in the world. I think it's easy to look at somebody who's a year on T when you're just about to start, and you're like, wow, look at all those changes. And you're like, wow, I'm only at month one. But for me, like, I really had to reframe that of, like, I didn't even think I would ever start hormones, and I'm already a month on T. Like, I'm now, like, 2.5 years on T. Like, that's mind-blowing to me. I'm on track to get top surgery next year. Like, that is, I can't believe that at all. So, yeah. Yeah. And it's hard to keep that mindset when you're in it. Like, that first month on T was just like, okay, well, something can happen now. That'd be great. And things were changing, obviously, but not things I could see, and not even necessarily things my partner could see, because we see each other every day. So she's like, I don't know, you look the same as yesterday, you know?
Yeah.
But then I'd go see somebody. But then I'd see someone that I hadn't seen in like 2 weeks, and they're like, oh my God, like your voice. I'm like, what are you talking about? Community is what got me through, for sure. But also, it can be a downfall. Well, on that note, speaking of like the Instagram community and like, just the comparison and all that, something I've been doing recently, which Nash, you and I have talked about. But when I catch myself comparing myself to somebody else on Instagram, I force myself to leave 3 positive comments on anybody's Instagram. Doesn't matter who, can be the same person, whatever. But I have to leave 3 positive comments before I can like get off Instagram, which I feel like is a really weird thing for somebody my age, because usually we're like trying to not spend as much time on Instagram. But I'm like, I'm already on here, and now it's a negative experience. I need to make it a positive one. So that's one tool that I like. I don't even know how I came up with it. I just kind of did it one day, and then I was like, I'm gonna run
with it. Yeah, that's awesome.
So yeah, that's helped a lot.
which I love because you're also then spreading positivity around.
Thanks. So yeah, I mean, that's one of my like tangible tools that I use every day. But outside of that, just looping back around to Nash, your original question that we were talking about, I don't know. It's a lot of mindfulness, and that's a very like, what is mindfulness even? You know, like I feel like a lot of people aren't educated on that yet. I think it's up and coming for sure, but those things are hard to explain without going to therapy. I feel like personally, like I'm not a therapist. I probably could be. I've been in therapy long enough. I could figure it out at this point, but I'm definitely not a therapist. So, you know, sometimes I feel like I can't say certain things because I'm like, I don't want it to be like taken as like, oh, I'm going to do this thing and it's going to change my life. Like, I mean, it could, but you should probably work with a professional on that. So yeah. So that's always my recommendation, is to work with a professional if you can. And there's so many resources now, like BetterHelp, and there's another one I can't remember the name of, but it's an online therapy too. And it's supposedly affordable. I've never looked into it because I've had my therapist.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, and one of the things that she did, because I'm like, you say mindfulness and I don't know what that means, so I'm like, nope, I'm not doing it. You know, like that's just my reaction to things. And like the other day, because I have shot anxiety, but I have anxiety about getting my blood drawn too, like to the point that I like almost pass out. And the last time I tried to go, I had an anxiety attack before we even left the house. So obviously that's a problem. But so my therapist was like, let's try tapping. And I'm like, I don't know what that is. No, I'm not doing it. That sounds crazy. And then I like asked my doctor about it, because I talked to my doctor and he actually prescribed me an anti-anxiety medication to try. And I was like, yeah, so like my counselor said to try tapping, and he was like, yeah, do it. And I was like, that's not the answer I wanted, buddy. Like, can you retract that? And Natalie was with me at the appointment, so I'm like, I can't even like lie about it and say he said it's not a good idea, you know? But yeah, so that's just like my initial reaction to things like that. And one thing my therapist did was, instead of just being like, oh, let's try mindfulness, it was like, this is just my practice and what I do. Here's some homework, go do it. And then it's like, now I look back and I'm like, oh, she was having me write affirmations.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it wasn't framed mm-hmm. that way, though. So that made it easier for me. You know, thank you for having me on. And I really like that I was able to talk about mental health in general, because I don't feel like it's talked about enough.
I agree.
Or it's talked about in like the acceptable way, you know, where it's like, oh yeah, it's okay to have a bad day, but it's like, no, but what does a bad day look like? And like, what happens after that? And how does that affect you 3 months from now or 3 years from now? Like, there's more to it than just the one time of feeling bad. And I think that's kind of where we as a community in general, not even just the trans community, but as people, that's where it kind of ends. It's like, oh, I had a bad day, that's okay, moving on, the next day's great, which like is a good mindset, I think, to start getting yourself out of a rut. But that can't be your only tactic. So you can't just consistently like, oh, well, that sucked, but I'm good. You know, like, that's bottling it up.
It's gonna build up.
Yeah, exactly. It's essentially the same. You know, like we were talking about, like with starting hormones, it's like, oh, everything's gonna be great. Well, I kind of had that mentality with like, oh, I'm gonna move in with my partner and everything's gonna be great. Like, we'll see each other all the time, she'll be with me all the time. That causes some issues too. Like, okay, mm-hmm. now you're in my space mm-hmm. 100% of the time. I need you to like not yeah. be in my space for a second.
And like, what are these dishes and why are the lights oh, on yeah. and the laundry, please?
The dishes, oh man. I'm very like OCD about the dishes. It drives me there are dirty dishes in the sink right now. And it like, I can't do it. It just drives me crazy.
Mm-hmm. And I think that there will be a lot of people out there that will at least relate to something in this story for sure.
I hope so. That's like, that is my mission in life, and like why I decided to, you know, be open about my transition. It was like, if I can just like help one person, that's all that matters to me. Like, I just want one person to see like it's gonna get better and it's gonna be okay, and like it sucks right now, like it's hard right now, and it's the light at the end of the tunnel isn't even visible, but it's there, I promise. Like, yeah, I had somebody message me on Instagram yesterday and they're like, you're such an inspiration, thank you so much. And that was the first time I've gotten that, and so I was just like, I don't even know what to do with this information, but thank you. Like, so sweet.
You screenshot that and saved that for a day.
Oh, I did. I sent it to my wife and was like, what does this mean? She's like, that you're doing what you wanted to do. I was like, yeah, that's true.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Transitional Wisdom Podcast. If you feel like you would like to share your own story, or you have a topic you want us to cover, or simply want to show your support, please shoot us an email or visit our website. All of our contact info can be found in the episode details. Special thank you to Janelle Mack for creating our amazing theme song, and to AJ, our sound engineer, who makes all of this possible. And of course, to you, our listeners. Thanks.
Who knew this would happen? A magic potion could save my heart. Who knew that these feelings had a name? I'm worthy of change, same as you are.